grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, October 27, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, but right now from Palm Beach Gardens with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Williams. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, Mr. Bartlett. How is your day?
I'm having a good day because I'm making plans for the new studio.
Wonderful.
Which at this stage sounds like it might be in Kentucky.
Oh, man, that'd be quite a move, right?
Well, for us oldsters, when I drop the soap in the shower, I look around to see what else I can do while I'm down there at my age. So, you know, for us oldsters, yeah, it's a bit of a move. But it's going to be exciting because we don't have a place chosen up there yet, but we're going to be looking for a place where we've got room for a soundproof studio, much like the one we had in Nashville. And we're looking forward to it, mate. So I'm excited. It's a good day.
Very good. Well, congratulations. I'm excited about your move.
Okay, moving on to a bit of follow-up from last week's show. I stuffed up. I am so sorry, family, that you didn't have your Friday podcast, the very first Friday we were doing it, but you didn't have it until late into the evening, and that was all my fault, and we have resolved that now. We're dealing with some new gear. We're dealing with an old man here, and we're dealing with a failing memory.
Hey, don't talk about me like that.
Hey, listen, mate, we heard this week from Michael Foster again.
I'm telling you what, that guy's getting to be
whatever you call him, just put cereal in front of it.
Yeah. eater. A cereal eater.
Oh.
He eats cereal.
He writes, hi, Mike, Barris, Jeff, and family. Thank you for another terrific podcast. I have to say it inspired my recent reply to a young man who inquired about our study. Now, Mike and Derek, what they did was they advertised a Bible study on Craigslist, and they're getting calls from surrounding states as well as other areas. So he wrote a letter to a young man called Aaron who inquired about their study and is trying to find a fit for himself, theologically, as he would call it. He tells me he's still trying to digest the podcast link he listened to, Religion's Faithless God. I loved entitling that. I thought that should startle a few rabbits. He has actually responded positively to this letter and said it clearly presented some important points, so some progress. I've also recommended Mike's book, One, for his read list, and The Complete Gospel Handbook by Bob Hines. Now, Bob, we're still pushing your book. There is a good title for it, The Complete Gospel Handbook.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a way shorter title. Maybe you should retitle that book, mate. A lot of what I've written to him is taken almost verbatim from you guys as far as the main points I've learned. So, thank you, Mike, especially for the 3 points of Christianity's error that you detail. Mm. And Randy French, a big shout for his great clarifications. Thank you. If I misquoted, forgive me. If I didn't misquote, forgive my good job at plagiarism. But seriously, Mike, these 3 points belong on a placard like a warning or danger sign in every household.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he's talking about there are the three
offenses. Things that,
three offenses, yes, that Paul points out about faith.
Yeah, to God's grace.
To God's grace.
And this is going to be a hit the ball and drag Charlie again. And this time I know who Charlie is.
You think you know who Charlie is. And Victor Brennan, later in the show, Victor Brennan proves it with what he calls you and me. So just remember I'm your elder again now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 66 and you're only 65.
66
so.
Years old. My goodness.
Ness. I also sent a copy of this letter to a young woman and a mother who, as it turns out, is not only of the preterist fulfilled covenant, new covenant position. Dang. Wow. That's even longer than the Seventh-day Southern Baptist Northern Division laying on of hands baptism with immersion.
It's longer than Bob Hine's title to his book.
And this woman, a preterist, fulfilled covenant, new covenant position, but holds a Doctor of Divinity and Theology from Harvard. Well, there is no mental slouch.
Mm-hmm.
And is on the staff at what she calls a progressive hippie-style church that meets in Minneapolis with 75 to 100 progressive-type Christians. From what I have seen around a large circle of sofas, a smart lady that I've only talked with by phone, after some flattering remarks about what I wrote, she wrote me back and said they would love to meet me and Dexter and that they would be very receptive to my views as a GR kind of guy boy. Oh, as a GR kind of guy. Boy, am I in trouble or what? Mike, we may actually have a meeting place for you to get to the Midwest yet. Thanks, guys. Michael. Anyway, here is a copy of the note to Darren. Now, he wrote me what he wrote to Darren, and it was just wonderful stuff. It was good stuff, as usual.
Man.
But the reason we keep talking about Michael is because people like Mike Foster and Mel Martin and Al Vitale over there in Gainesville, Georgia, and Brad over there in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
These are people who are making the gospel a permanent thing in their lives because of how they're communicating it. And we just want to encourage every single person to do that if they can. Not because of anything that we'll get out of it, but because of what you might get out of it.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Victor Brennan writes, "Hello, Ordinary Mike and Dr. Don." He didn't actually say ordinary, but when I look at the mic on the page right next to Dr. Don, it does look a bit ordinary, you know?
Yeah, of course. Well, he's in Hawaii, so his brain is half-baked right now.
What is? You just gave me a picture of him with one of those little tiki refreshment bars.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Half-baked.
Yeah, sits on a refreshment bar and with the tropical breezes blowing.
And more like the tropical drinks flowing, but yeah, whatever floats your boat. I think I figured it out for myself, he says. Yay. In chapter 9, Paul, and he's talking about the book of Hebrews here. In chapter 9, Paul, verse 14, admonishes the Hebrews that the blood of Christ will purge their conscience from dead works to serve the living God. He then goes on and in verse 26 says that Christ has appeared once in the end of the world to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself.
Yes.
All of chapter 9 reiterates the effectiveness of the blood of Christ to deal completely with the conscience. Chapter 10 again goes into details about the old versus new priesthood, and in verse 2, that if the blood of bulls and goats would have been effective, that once purged, they, the Hebrews, should not have had any more conscience of sins. In verse 22, he encourages the Hebrews at having their hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience. My take on this is that an evil conscience is a conscience that thinks God is still upset at them and they're scared of death.
Mm-hmm.
In verse 25, he encourages meeting together to encourage the CPR of the gospel, LOL.
Yeah, I like that.
Don't go back to legalism. As you see the day approaching, as you see your own demise approaching, know that your conscience has been sprinkled by the blood of Jesus, and there is nothing to fear from death. I was trying to reconcile this day, quote unquote, with before the cross and after the cross and the day of the Lord. I think the day in this case is the individual's own conscience before God when the person dies, keeping in mind the tenuous situation daily life in that place and time was, and that death was always just around the corner. Cheers, Victor Brennan.
Death was always just around the corner. Cheers. Just some kind of a collision going in there, right?
Like you said, his mind's half-baked.
Well, this is our Victor. We do claim him. And without any reservations or hesitation, But this is Vic. He is going to think through every line of something once he latches onto it. I don't have any disagreement with what he is saying. I haven't gone through this line by line from this point of view ever before in my life. But I don't hear anything that is, number one, there's nothing in what he said that is opposing of the gospel whatsoever. And yeah, sounds like a good way to read it. What do you think, Mr. Bartlett?
Oh, I think...
Oh, I just degraded you, didn't I?
I can take degradation at your hands. Our friendship will barely tolerate it, but...
I'm sorry, Doctor. Go right ahead.
I'll just battle on, I will. mate, the only comment I'd make is... and this book was one of the first books that I read that the simple rules of understanding New Testament epistles really came to the fore. Who was he writing to?
Yeah.
He was writing to Jewish people. Not Gentiles, but to Hebrews. That's why the name of the book is called The Hebrews. He is a Hebrew himself, whoever the writer is. He is addressing Hebrews who are thinking of going back to their original roots. And he's saying, look, there's no need to leave your roots. There's no need to deny your ethnicity. Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. Now, you've got to ask yourself, to a Hebrew's mind and to Hebrew ears, what does do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together? What is that? Well, it's not church as we know. We know that.
Exactly.
And it wasn't even gathering together in a fellowship of the way, as it was called, or quote-unquote believers. Of that day, it wasn't that. An assembly was something which was a feast day or a very solemn day in the Jewish calendar. In fact, we read about solemn convocations in the scriptures.
Right.
We read about the seven feasts during the year, of which the Passover and Pentecost was one, Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Trumpets, and so forth. So these feasts were the ethnic enjoyments of a Hebrew mind. And what he's saying is, look, you don't have to leave the way. What you need to understand is this is a better way with better testaments, with better blood, with better priests, with better everything. But you don't have to forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Now, how many times have you and I even preached, mate, let alone heard, that meant you've got to go to church?
Yeah, exactly. It's so ridiculous to bring that out of that verse. It really is.
Craziness. But that's the only comment I'd make, mate, because a wise man like me, a doctor, always just keeps a little in reserve just to keep you in check, I think.
Don, can we go to that verse in your in the Greek and let's just see what that says. I've never done that before a day in my life. And let's see what those words mean in the Greek. Do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together.
Okay, well, the King James, in its quaint Shakespearean language, says, don't forsake the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And that's the day that Victor Brennan is talking about.
Uh-huh.
So let's just read a couple. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith, verse 23, without wavering, for he is faithful that promised, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and unto good works.
Now, let's back to that one. Let's go through that one first. Let us hold the profession of our faith. Let's look at that just a moment. Tell me what that actually says in the Greek.
Kateko homologia, which is homo, the same, logia, a word. So it actually is the biblical word for confession. Let us hold fast the, which means to speak with, in Latin, confess, with, speak, basio to speak, con with. In the Greek, it is homologia or logia, and it's same speak, same word. So let us hold fast. Now, that holding fast is kateko, simply means, you know, when a footballer brings another footballer down and he holds him onto the ground until the tackle has been, he holds him fast. The same word of our expectation, our elpis, sometimes this is translated as hope. In English, it's translated it as faith, but it ain't faith. It would be pisteo if it was faith. Without wavering, cleanness, means without, cleanness means to hang on to. So without wavering, for he is pistos, he is trustworthy. This does come from the root of faith. For he is faithful or trustworthy. Epigello, who announced, says here, that promised. But who announced? Who?
So it's not promised, it's announced.
Yes. The he is not in the original, but it's certainly inferred. For he that is faithful that announced. Which is, when you think about it, kind of what the angels did when they said, I know, and on earth, peace.
Yeah, so now the term hour, where does that show up in the Greek?
It doesn't.
I just kind of knew that. That's the reason I wanted to check this. I didn't want to say something because I didn't want to wind up with egg on my face.
Yep.
Like somebody from Alabama or something. But
yeah.
Aren't you glad you're leaving Alabama to not suffer my jokes? I got to come up with Kentucky jokes now.
you'll look in vain for that.
All right. So basically, it's simply saying hold on to the confession.
No, because of the way the confession, the connotations and baggage that confession has in our day and age, you're better off using the word agreement. The agreement, which is what it really, homologeo, to speak with, or the same speak.
So, as much of a direct translation as I can get out of that means, hold on to the agreement that was proclaimed by him. Hold fast to the agreement of faith, not our profession, because our is not even in here.
Yeah.
So hold fast to the agreement of faith, which he proclaimed, his faith, his proclamation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
And if you set this in the book of Hebrews, that this is about the great high priest, Paul said that he is the high priest of the profession of faith. And again, our, I think, is in that one, which probably isn't even in the Greek, but it is not here. And Jesus is the professor of faith. He is the confessor. He is the one who approached God with the confession that or profession or declaration or agreement that was required to seal this covenant completely.
Well, in another part, he says, looking unto Jesus, the author, finisher of?
Of faith, yes. And the term our is italicized there.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, the translators missed a few, and they got a few. They said, we've got to explain it to the lowest common denominator out there, the dumbest brain. And so we'll put these words in just to help them know. They did that because they had a previous theology which informed their translation.
Now I'm questioning how many times in the book of Hebrews does the word our faith show up that our is not even in the translation, because we've got two for sure here. One is italicized.
Well, here's one the translators missed. Verse 22, just the verse previous, says, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance or absolute total confidence, the Greek says, of faith.
Yeah.
They forgot to put our in there.
Yes.
Now, and then he says, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience, that's true, and our bodies washed with pure water. I've never really understood what that meant. but let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of God's faith.
Right.
Now that he has sprinkled our hearts from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of faith. Let us unyieldingly grasp onto
the agreement.
The agreement of faith.
Yeah.
Not our faith.
Yeah, the agreement of faith that was proclaimed by him.
And I have no problems translating it that way, because the context is about God and what he has done.
Yes.
For he is faithful that promised. Well, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
I know that wasn't me.
As is the whole book of Hebrews about God and Christ and that agreement that took place.
Yeah.
Jesus being the high priest of all of this, Jesus being the sacrifice of all of this. In the old covenant, everything that was a what became a who. The temple, which is a what, became a who, which also is the reason that people misunderstand this thing about preterism. The what became a who. There's no whats that were fulfilled in the scriptures. Only a who was fulfilled in the scriptures.
We then move on to the next verse, not forsaking or... not forsaking, that's good translation there, or not leaving behind or deserting. The episunagoge, now you see the episunagoge is a Greek word for the assembly, and you notice that the epi is the prefix, it means through. Sunagoge, what's that sound like to you?
Synagogue?
Yeah, really. Not, so, and now I'm going to read what Strong's says. Mr. James Strong's, and everyone who's really serious has a Strong's, right?
Yes. You're not strong if you don't have a strong.
We used to say crudence for the crude, Strong's for the strong, and there was another one I forget now.
And if you carry it around with you all the time, you will be strong.
dang, yes. You won't need to go to any gym. So now Mr. Strong's gives one of his definitions of this word as a Christian meeting, especially a Christian meeting reoccurring for worship. What?
Oh, wow.
What the hell? How does...
how do you get synagogue, the term Christian meeting out of synagogue?
Well, the word in the Greek does mean a meeting through which fellowship and other stuff happens. But
right.
But that can be... the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, it's not, there is no, and here is a book written by a Hebrew to Hebrews, but Mr. James Strong, out of his, was it Anglican theology, he is absolutely quite certain that it's a Christian meeting.
Gee. Wow.
Anyway, not forsaking the, the assembling of ourselves. Now, that's an exact rendition there, of ourselves as, or just like would be as easy there, ethos, which is the same as the English word ethos, the mode of some, but parakaleo, but exhorting. Now, one another is not in the original at all. There ain't no one another. It goes.
Wow.
It goes straight from parakaleo, kai.
Well, they had to put in everyone if they got an hour in there, right?
I guess so. Yes.
Yeah.
Exhorting, and to sodos, very much so more as we look at, or you look at, it could be us all look at, hemera day. The day approaching. So let's go through quickly. Not forsaking the synagogue of ourselves, as some do, but exhorting, and so much the more as you see an approaching day.
Now, to synagogue is to assemble, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, what, Don, I'm hearing something in my own conscience here. Having studied and taught the book of Hebrews fairly extensively and retaught and about ready to reteach it again, actually, But this whole thing is just like the verses before this. This is about what the faith of Christ accomplished. So now this is a new concept for me to use these terms in this manner. But if we bring it out, fact that the what became a who, so not only the temple, but the synagogue, the gathering together became a who, all right, which the who became all of us, and all of us became the one. So if he's saying stop forsaking the synagogue of us being synagogued, if we are synagogued in Christ, we were all synagogued, right? But it doesn't mean what Christianity and James Strong's inferred it to be whatsoever, for sure.
Nothing like it. There are two ways you can look at this. That assembling, that is a doing word. It's a verb. Mm-hmm. And yet, the original Greek, it's a noun. So, in fact, yes, it's noun first person accusative, singular female, meaning it's a noun.
Wow, that's striking.
Try this word, assemblage. Assemblage.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I was wondering about the ing on that. That was my next question for you. Because assembling is something that we see in the progress of happening or having happened.
Yes.
It is definitely a happening. But if this is a noun, this is nothing in process. This is...
Exactly.
This is an it. This is the thing.
So let's read that through again. Not abandoning the assemblage of, you know, it depends on the translator who's going to say, of themselves or of ourselves, according as custom to some or of some, but entreating and to so much rather more, inasmuch you are observing nearing the day, is probably the most transliteral translation.
Yeah.
So don't abandon the assemblage.
Yes. Noun, not an action.
Correct.
So it has nothing to do with what they're doing. It is a way of thinking. He's cautioning people who've abandoned the same thing that Paul has cautioned everything in the book of Hebrews about, all the way through, about abandoning the understanding of the gospel and going back to legalism.
Now, when you look at the context, and I know we don't like doing that much, it's very unlike us. You know what? That, I'm learning today, because that is so much more intelligent than what I thought it meant, meaning don't give up, you know, the feast days and that, because he says, because, verse 26, if we sin after obtaining the recognition of the truth, it's no longer leaving a sacrifice consumed.
Yes.
And if you do this, and if you do that, if you go back there, if you forget the assemblage, yes, of yourself together, and you go back there, of how much worse punishment, of how much worse punishment are you supposing will be? And you want to go, yep, you want to go back to Moses' law, verse 28? You go back there,
yep,
but it ain't pretty.
That's all in the same chapter?
In the same 10 verses, mate.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
In the same 6 or 7 verses.
Boy, you talk about being verse damned. This is one of those places, folks, where we have allowed tradition and Christianity to lift this out, tell us what it meant, and nobody can quote you one single verse around, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together.
Well, we just read verse 25, not forsaking the assemblage, wow, of yourself. Now, 5 verses on, every Christian loves to quote this verse. For we're acquainted with him who was saying, mine is vengeance, I will repay. The Lord, yes, vengeance is mine, says the Lord, I will repay.
Oh,
now,
man.
under what covenant was that?
Yep.
And he's saying, you go back to the old way of Moses.
This is what you're going back to.
Yes.
Yeah. So you need to stop forsaking the fact we've already been synagogued. We've already come into one assembly. And how many times do you see that through the scriptures about being assembled together? How many times, just like with the declaration that in Acts and them all being assembled together in one accord? My goodness. So this has just, context and Greek has now put a hue on this that neither I nor Don nor you nor the Christian world has ever even considered, folks. We're fairly aware when we do research, especially since we got to the computer age, that to go be able to go in, and you're not going to find a search on this that is going to bring this out. What you've just witnessed is what the gospel revolution is all about. It's about context and definitions of words. It is all about the context. This is so interesting to me. This is why I call the Holy Ghost the great teacher, because there were words that were included in this that were out of focus of the gospel. Why would Paul be asking people to not forsake going to a synagogue? The very subject he is arguing against in the entire book of Hebrews. Don't go back there. Don't go back there, but then go back there. Don't forsake going back there. Don't go back there. Don't go back there, because you're going back to judgment. You're going back to an angry God. You're going back to sin. You're going back to all of these things in your conscience, which it also talks about having your conscience wiped clean of all of this stuff. So sin consciousness is there when you have not conceived of the fact that we've all been synagogued in Christ.
Victor Brennan, once again, thanks for screwing with our theology.
Well, that was funner than anything I've done in the last few weeks.
Religion is like a public swimming pool. Most of the noise comes from the shallow end.
Now, up on the website at the moment, all of the recent Calgary conference sessions are up there, and they're available for free right now. The five sessions from our winter 2015, that's 2 years ago, Canadian conference, that was priced at $10 until now, and after, I'm just going to let it go for the rest of this month. It's down to zero now, but we'll be repricing all of our products sometime in the future at 99 cents. Our executive producers, producers and sponsors will get them for free. If you're not an executive producer, producer or a sponsor, then you better hurry up and get a wriggle on and be one. And we'll tell you more about that later.
Hi, I am Marcel Rose, coming to you from Bouchen in Holland, where I maintain the Gospel Revolution radio service. If you need a fast injection of the Gospel CPR, that is the consistent, persistent and repetitive joy of the Gospel, then tune in to the Gospel Revolution Radio, playing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. To listen, go to gospelrevolution.com and under audio, at the top of the page, simply click on GR Radio 24/7.
We've had a little problem with some videos. We have some of the most amazingly well-produced videos. We've got 18 of them. I'm trying to get them up on YouTube currently, and I'm discovering that there's a problem here and a problem there, but we need help. If anyone in the family is particularly passionate about audio or about video or about moderating a forum on our website, we would love to hear from you. If you would like to take more of a hand in the publishing of the gospel, we would like to hear from you. If you would like to have more input into how the gospel goes out, we would like to hear from you. So, family, if you have any interests, and look, if you've got some interests that I haven't even mentioned, we want to hear from you too. Now, in the news, and this is just very quick because we've got a big topic to approach today. In the news, did you know that October is Pastor Appreciation Month, Michael?
Oh, my goodness. Should we bring out our old titles so we can be appreciated?
Well, I want you to know I appreciate you. I mean, doctor or no doctor, even uneducated as you are. Do you know the funny thing about that is I barely made it through grade 10. That was it. I was out. And I never went back except to go to seminary. And that was a mistake. So Pastor Michael, I want you to know.
It's a red letter day. It's a red letter day, Brother Mike. It's a red letter day.
It is indeed.
I appreciate you.
And I appreciate you, my friend.
Well, just have a little bit of a laugh on the side, can we? George Barna, now he is a guy that with Frank Viola wrote Pagan Christianity, a very, very insightful book. If you haven't read it, read it. Go buy it. Pagan Christianity. Costs you know, just a couple of brass razzoos, and you will never, ever, ever see a church, see ecclesiastical architecture, see ecclesiastical garb, see ecclesiastical rules and regulations. You will never see it again the same way. But he said in a recent survey that it shows that most pastors feel energized and supported. There's only one problem with that. You go to www.barna.com, barna.com, and just search out pastors feel energized and supported, and then go to www.pastorburnout.com and read the statistics, because the statistics are the exact opposite of the Barna survey. Now, what's that tell you, Mike?
I'm not sure.
Well, let me tell you what it tells me. Someone is telling porky pies.
Ah.
Yep, someone's telling porky pies here, and pastors will tell pastorburnout.com different things than they'll tell a George Barna survey. Why? Because...
Yeah, you got to make it all look good, right?
There you go, mate. So remember... Rush up to your pastor. You've only got this week is only left, this Sunday. Rush up to him. I want you to, in church, I want you to run your arms around his neck and around his waist and give him a big sloppy kiss in front of everybody and say, Pastor, this is Appreciation Month and how I appreciate you.
Well, you're going to have to be a four-armed person to do that now, Don.
Most pastors I know are, mate. They from what I've heard and seen, mate, they're like bloody octopus. when it comes to their secretary, anyway.
And what's next?
So, remember, if you've got any questions.
Could this be madness? What did you hear? What you heard might not be perfectly clear. Take a stand, I will be right here. Call questions of the life, blood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions of the life.
If you're a registered Amazon user, then Amazon will donate to Mike Williams Ministries 0.5% of everything you buy from them. Look, it ain't going to cost you nothing. It's not going to cost you a sniff of a rose. You just go there and you buy whatever you want. Nothing else will change for you except now you'll be an active participant in the gospel revolution without spending one extra red cent. Pretty neat, huh?
Gospel revolution.
Now, I believe you've got something pretty big for us today, mate.
Well, you know, we've been touching on this quite a bit already, but it really is freedom from these things. Please understand that everything that we've ever taught you that you have been freed from, we've never insisted that you exercise that freedom. We taught you many years ago that you're freed from sin, that sin does not exist. And yet we had people who really felt the need to confess their sins. And you know what we did? We said, then you should continue. As long as you feel the need for something, you should continue it. So we're not telling anybody what to do, because the gospel is not correction nor instruction. The gospel is good news. So as we go into this, please, for those of you that have an affection for one of these three words, and you are still persuaded that it is a viable part of your spiritual well-being and your life, please understand we're not insulting you or telling you not to do these things. We're simply telling you what the truth of the gospel shows us about these things to the best of our ability. Now, those three terms are prayer, faith, and hope. Now, we've gone through each of these in some degree of understanding. We're going to look at two things. We're going to look at what Christianity says it is. I'd also, Don, like to look and see what the Greek words say they are. And then we're going to talk about what people are saying when they say it as they go about their day, such as, I will be praying for you. Oh, really? So, you know, how many of you have used that as a Bible?
Hey, got me out of a lot of conversations back in the day.
Yeah, it got us out of a whole lot of doing anything about anything, too.
You bet.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just devastated. If I don't, I really need $5 to get, some chicken at KFC because my family's hungry. Well, I'll be praying for you, brother. So, with pockets full of $5 bills. Faith and hope are similar. So these are serious subjects. These consume daily life. And yet at the same time, Don, have nothing to do with daily life whatsoever as far as what happens. It's simply a matter of perception as to whether or not you think prayer, faith, and hope are active parts of defining what happens, the way it happens, when it happens. We've always said, God's the God of the 11th hour, and that you may have to wait for your answer from God right till before the stroke of midnight or whatever time we set it up to be. So hang on. Well, the only thing you're doing when you extend the time frame is you're extending the realm of chance and possibility. If you wait 15 minutes more, no matter what you are waiting for, you're waiting 15 more minutes, opens the realm 15 more minutes for greater chance and greater possibility of something happening. A hunter will do that. Why do hunters and fishermen sit on their butt in a boat and in a stand in a tree unless time itself extends the chance and the realm of chance and possibility for them?
Well, there is a tribe in Africa, and this tribe in Africa is known far and wide for the fact that every time it does a rain dance, it rains.
Yeah.
And one of the early explorers asked the chief of this tribe, how on earth do you make it happen? And he said, oh, we just don't stop dancing until it rains.
Yeah, exactly. Which proves the dance works, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I have a working theory that's going on inside of me that these three subjects, prayer, faith, and hope, are means by which we defer the reality of who we are to an external process. That by praying, that by doing something, faith without works is dead, of course, and hope our expectation of a good outcome is going to affect the outcome. That faith applied, whether you can see it or not see it, is going to change what was inevitable to happen unless faith was applied. Of course, faith can't be applied unless prayer is applied. So these three things pretty well form a coat of mail as far as they're really inseparable when it comes to discussing them. But I do want to discuss them because, as I said, my working theory is that when we defer to these three subjects, is it possible that we are deferring from the reality of the greatness that we are as human beings. The greatness that we became 2,000 years ago when God moved inside of the human race, yes, and moved out of heaven. It's important for you to know that God's abode is no longer heaven. Jesus made it very clear when he said, I'm going away, but when I do, me and the Father are coming back. The term mansion is used, and he made it very clear that as he returned, which ought to tell you something about the return of Christ, is not a future event. Jesus said, when I come back, he said, we're going to make our abode with you or in you. That's where we're going to live. We are going to carry out our existence inside and through the human race. Now, it sounds like a terribly limiting thing for God to do, but you have to understand that God knows how we are created. It is said, provable or not, I don't know one way or the other, that humans only use 10% of their brain capacity. Some people declare that as absolute fact. Some people question the validity of that. With all statements, we should have both going on. But if there's any truth to that at all, why in the world, if we are created by God, are we only at 10% brain capacity? Was it the possibility that God had 90% of that capacity reserved for the inspiration of God himself dwelling in the human race? And that this capacity would increase more and more as the human race progresses and gets away from the arcane and the external spiritual persuasions of every religion on earth and stop being afraid of how great we actually could be and expressing the fear. These subjects, prayer, faith, and hope, have become a way for us to forsake the fact that we have been assembled together in one. These are external expressions and by all means and purposes. So first off, Mr. Bartlett, you've sat so quietly through this
tirade,
at least that. And you can tell I've had to wait for 3 weeks before I can say this. So you better not make me do this anymore because it gets worse as the weeks go by.
No, boy.
So, number one, comments. And then I really do want us to go and look at the Greek word, maybe even the Hebrew words for each of these. And then in the subsequent PowerCast that we have, our plan is that we will do a segment on prayer, one on faith, and one on hope. But right now we want to deal with all of them as they are the coat of mail that I expressed earlier. You cannot have one without the other. I don't see how you can. But let's look at what they actually scripturally, biblically are. Let's see how the religious world uses them, and then how the general population uses them.
While you were talking, I was looking up because I had a chance to actually revise all of my grade 10 math and grade 10 English while you were talking there. But a couple of thoughts occurred to me. Number one, in Matthew 4, 5:44, he says, pray for those who despitefully use you.
Yeah.
Now, this tells me that God doesn't pray. Of course, are you with me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Now, another thing that occurred to me was faith, prayer, and hope all rely for their integrity upon dualism.
Yes.
You have to believe in dualism, or you have to believe in a God out there and a me in here, and a problem over there too.
Exactly.
Now, hope may be less than the other two. Hope, I mean, I hope to win the Powerball. I'd like to win the lotto. I know exactly what I'd do. I wouldn't buy you a new pill, but I would buy me one. And, you know, like all those all those preachers used to say, look, money doesn't buy you happiness, but I just thought I'd like to get a second opinion, mine, and see, I'd like to at least give it a shot and see if it doesn't work out for me. You've got to believe in dualism.
Yeah. I think that's the real key, what you're bringing up here, Don. This is why this has become questionable for me. Because as you say, this is dualism. Prayer is an expression to something outside. Faith is an expression of something outside. Hope, as you said, can be a little different. We'll go into that later. But yes, please continue.
So let's go. Faith, prayer, and hope, I think, is the order that you've gone in. And
prayer, faith, and hope.
Oh, now you want me to change.
But we can do them in any order you want. I don't care.
Okay, let's have a look at faith. Now, there's a few things we need to understand about faith. Faith is not belief. We use belief as the noun for faith in English simply because we don't have a verb for faith. I have invented one. It's faith. I faith.
Mm-hmm.
I faith in the fact that what is happening before my very eyes right now is happening. I don't have to believe. I know. I don't have to believe. See, belief and faith are two really different things. A belief is more of a hope thing. Now, Jesus had faith. I don't see people achieving with their belief what Jesus achieved with his faith. I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
Greater things than these will you do? Well, don't be giving me that, well, there's more of you now, so that it'll be greater in volume. No, he was pretty clear about what he said.
Yes.
Greater things than what I do, you'll do? I don't see that happening.
He didn't say many more things than these shall you do, and there's nobody doing even many more of those things. And when those things are happening now, and they do happen now, but they happen by science and technology. The dead are raised. The blind are healed. The deaf are made to hear. So continue.
So the word faith generally means a firm persuasion. It means a conviction based upon hearing. This is what Paul was referring to when in Romans 10 and from verse 9 on. How will they believe unless they hear? So it's a firm persuasion based on hearing. And there's an interesting thing in the life of Jesus we understand, and that is he said, I only do the works that I see my Father do. You can't tell me that that's faith when you see it happening. Come on, that is not faith. Now, we have come to believe that faith is me doing something when I can't see a thing that would support it logically.
Exactly. No chance, no possibility.
Now, that's not faith. That's stupidity. If I jump off the roof hoping to fly with a firm conviction I will fly because I saw someone on TV do it and I heard him and I believed that I could fly, I am still going to be ending up as dead meat. There is a big difference between the faith that religion says we should have and the faith that we know Jesus had, because we saw his faith in demonstration and power. Have you ever heard of anyone walking on the water since? One thing that you say, Mike, and I love it, is in this day of videos of this and videos of that and all the cat videos and dog videos and Lord knows what videos, we have not got one video of anyone's leg growing out on stage. Not one. You would have thought.
As many times as it happens. I mean, my God, I remember in the Word of Faith days, it happened in everybody's service everywhere around, in every country, every state, every country around the world. And now, not a single video of such thing.
And get this. The Greek word for faith is pistis or pisteo. And the Greek word for faithfulness comes off that lemma. It comes off that Greek root. There is a word, faithfulness.
Yes.
There is a wonderful word, faithfulness. And why it's wonderful is we know that God is ever faithful.
Yes.
You can put your trust in it. God is faithful. And that faithfulness denotes every time the same.
Mm-hmm. So when Paul said to one of the groups, he says, "For I have seen your faith." Is it possible that what Paul is talking? Because how can you see faith?
Well, actually, if I recall right, Paul said, your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world, about verse 13 of the first chapter. Yeah.
So is he talking about faithfulness? Because faithfulness can be seen.
Faithfulness can be seen, yes. You could observe in somebody a conviction based upon or a firm persuasion based upon hearing something. You could say that if that's what faith is, then fine. You've got a firm conviction based on hearing something. But, of course, in the Word of Faith movement, we thought we heard from God. And that was the basis of our faith. Well, unless you have heard something, I mean, and everyone heard from God differently.
Yeah.
Thus saith the Lord. No, he don't. Yeah. He don'teth. Mm-hmm. Yet he doth. Yeah. And so forth. So faith is not belief, number one. Faith is something which never fails. There is a constantness about faith. Now, I know in the Bible it says, and Jesus couldn't do any great miracles in some places because of the people's unbelief or unfaith. And we're going to get into that when we cover faith. But faith is not belief, and it is a firm conviction based upon hearing something. Jesus heard from his Father. Jesus did nothing that he didn't see his Father do. Now, if Jesus could do no miracles in some place, and we'll only give you this as a teaser, because of people's unbelief, then why was he even trying? Mm-hmm. I mean, why would he try? Because surely God didn't, you know, if God does it, if God's in it, it's going to always happen. So faith, the word is pistis. Unfaith, the word is apistis, or the absence of faith. It's not unbelief. It's the absence of faith. It's quite different. And the problem we've had in the English language is we've confused the two.
So from what you have said, this is what I have gathered. What faith does, faith then holds it in that place.
Hmm.
So faith doesn't do something that would allow that thing to slip back to where it was.
No, I don't know about that, because Lazarus did die after all, didn't he, eventually?
Well, it depends on which part of resurrection you're looking at.
Okay, that's interesting. Faith holds in place. Well, for how long does faith need to? I mean, faith has only got to work for 10 minutes for me to win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 10 minutes and I'm forking over my $10 and guessing me numbers and...
So that's the question, though, is that faith?
Well, it's certainly hope. And if I was in the Word of Faith yet, I would say, well, if I believe the Lord told me to buy it, that I would claim that was faith. But the question is it faith?
Yeah. And what about that would be, as you said, it certainly is hope. Why would it certainly be hope? Hope is, and that's the next word we'll go through as to what the definition is.
Oh, you're switching all the bloody words up now. I mean, I got all my notes here, and I got notes coming out my armpit, mate. And okay.
Well, you're the one that brought it up. Don't blame me.
Now, hope in the Greek is elpids, or elpizo, and you can have elpizo, which is hope. You can have a elpizo.
How does this, whatever we look at as a definition of hope, how does that fit into the statement that is made, I think, in Hebrews, where he says, if a man sees that which he hoped for, why doth he yet hope for it?
Well, isn't that just a logical statement? I mean, if I hoped to have my daughter out of hospital and home with a family,
right.
Well, the moment it's home, I don't have to hope for it anymore.
Right, but therefore an expectation of good or favorable outcome. Hope is an expectation of a favorable outcome.
In my interests.
Yes.
I mean, I might hope for your death. Wouldn't be very favorable, but it might pay off for me. I don't know.
Wow, we're looking into the subconscious of Don Bartlett right now, I think.
So, as I said, elpids or elpis is the noun, hope. So if I have hope, that would be in the Greek elpis, and it means a favorable and confident expectation. That's all it means. It means nothing more.
So it is a favorable expectation.
Well, in Isaiah 28:19, don't forget it talks about an evil hope.
Wow. And I understand that. if it is the expectation of a certain outcome, I mean, if you've got an enemy and you want something bad to happen to them, that would be an evil hope.
Now, the second word based on hope is actually the verb to hope, elpizo. So it's gone now from elpis to elpizo. John 5:45, do not think I will accuse you before the Father. The one who accuses you is Moses, in whom you have set your hope. This is Jesus talking. It's the verb, elpizo. And that's just simply to practice having a favorable and confident expectation. It's the doing word, I'm hoping. I'm hoping.
So in that case, to just look into that statement a little bit more, so what Jesus is saying is that they put their hopes in Moses and it failed.
Well, he's not saying that in that statement. I mean, that can be absolutely inferred from context of other Bible verses. But in that statement, he's saying, look, you put your hope in Moses.
Yeah.
And it's just a clean-cut statement.
Gotcha.
Now, there is another verb that includes this concept of pizzo, and it's prolopizo, which means prolopizo means to hope from, pro means ahead of, in front of, or before in time. So prolopizo means that you are you're hoping ahead of time, and we see that in I think in Ephesians 1:12, it says, to the end that we who were the first to hope in Christ, hope beforehand. Who were the first to hope beforehand in Christ?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jews hoped for the Messiah.
Right, exactly.
So it's like predestination for hope.
So in that case, there is no such thing as hope anymore because that has been realized.
Yes. We were the first to do that, but yeah, it's been realized. And of course, all the prophets hoped for something they didn't quite get, but they hoped for it. And the last way in which this word is used in the New Testament is the absence of hope, or apelpizo, which means simply to be cast down, to be to have no hope. Ah, means without. A means without. So apelpizo means not to have any hope. So that is the way that hope is used in the New Testament. It's simply a favorable and confident expectation.
I think I may have shared this story a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to share it again. And of course, these words, all three of these, faith, hope, and prayer, have really begin to take on a different hue for me, and an experiment, a life experiment for me. I was speaking with a psychologist just a few weeks ago, and we got started talking about the subject of hope, and I had expressed my view at the time that in consideration of hope deferred makes the heart sick. You know, that sounds like that hope can in some circumstances not be a good thing if your expectation of something favorable is deferred, it makes the heart sick. So in the long term, hope can actually make you heart sick, according to that statement.
Yeah.
And then I came to this point in my life, and most people know this, just a few years ago, that I redefined hope for me, because I found there were plenty of mental and emotional pitfalls in carrying out hope in the definition that I had. And the definition that I had was that I was hoping for favorable outcomes in things. Well, when I hoped for favorable outcomes and they actually turned out that way, wow, that was fantastic. So I had an emotional high actually about it. But when I had hope for something that did not materialize, number one, I did become heart sick because it was so long in coming. And then when the realization was that it did not turn out favorable for me.
And it probably wasn't going to. I mean, like, by the time most men are 30, they realize they're not going to be rocket scientists. So you came to the realization that there was no chance it was probably going to. Well,
yes, exactly. Yeah. They're just, that was over with. The situation itself said it was over with. So it's not like it was something that, well, let's try again.
So you're hoping for this woman to accept your proposal or marriage, but by the time she marries somebody else, all hope is abandoned. Well, all hope.
Well, unless you go, do something to her husband, or a divorce comes, so maybe people could say,
"Well, that's not good." Then they're used.
Well, hope springs eternal.
Yeah. No, you're wanting it. You're wanting it fresh and out of the box and rosy.
Yeah, exactly. So the new definition of hope for me became, regardless of the outcome, I'm going to be okay. So I detached hope away from the expectation of an outcome.
But that is still a expectation of a favorable outcome.
No, the outcome itself has nothing to do with it. The condition of my mental and emotional state, I'm going to accept whatever happens.
Yes, but you've defined what you're hoping for. So in that case, it is the expectation of a, well, okay, you can say it's the expectation of a favorable outcome, but it's still the hope that you'll end up okay.
Yes, and that's why I say I redefined hope. Because one can be consistent, the other is quite inconsistent as to an outcome.
You redefined hope so that it would never fail.
It didn't. It never fails me. It
sounds like faith to me.
In pertaining to my mental and emotional state of being, as to regardless of the outcome, goodness, we call it whatever we want, but it does not extend beyond that. It doesn't have anything to do with my circumstances. So are we leading people to false expectation?
Did you say false expectation? Okay, I've had that.
I did not say that at all, but your brain converted that for me.
In fact, most of my life's been taken up with that.
So here we are. We're examining these things. We've done a brief overview of, we've not done one, a prayer. Let's do that for just a moment now.
Well, I'm about to upset some people here. Eukamai is the Greek word to pray. Usually it means to God. Praying can mean from a person to person, such as somebody pleading their case before a judge.
Making a request or a plea.
Yep. Or, get this. Now, I'm going to read you a couple of verses. Let me see. And Paul said in Acts 26:29, I would wish to God that whether in a short or a long time, not only you, but also all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains. Now, I believe this may have been in front of Agrippa, but it doesn't matter. He said, I wish to God. That word, wish to God?
Yeah.
I would wish, that is the word pray.
Yeah.
Now, let's have a look at Acts 27:29, and it says, fearing that we might run aground somewhere on the rocks, they cast four anchors from the stern. This is a shipwreck Paul was involved in, and wished for daybreak. That word wished is pray.
Oh, my
God. It's the same word. Yeah, it's the same word. I was hoping you'd get it sooner or later. In Romans 9, verse 3, he says, Paul says, I could wish that I myself were accursed, separated from God for the sake of my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh. That word is pray. Now, it's the same word. It's the same word. So the first thing we need to know is that the word pray in the Greek can equally mean wish.
The question is prayer any more effective than wishing?
We're going to have fun on the week we do prayer. There is another word translated as pray, and that or to pray, eretao, and that is to ask And it can be to make request. It can be to translated as ask. These are in line with if you have a wish, you'll ask something or of somebody. And then there is another word, demawahi, which is actually based on the previous word, and it means to call somebody to one's aid, and is generally rendered by the verb to pray in the Authorized Version, and you also have the word UK, which means a prayer, a vow. It could be a vow. Mm. It doesn't have to be a prayer. In Acts 18 and 18, Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren, was put out to sea for Syria, and with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Cenchreae, he had his hair cut, for he was keeping a vow. Now, you would think that the last thing about prayer would be a promise, but a promise is also, that word has also been translated as prayer. Mm. So we're starting to see that the word pray in English, it's like the word hell. You've taken several different Greek words and made them all mean the same thing in English. You can't do that, but you can. Oh, let's finish this off. The word used in 1 Timothy 4, 5 is intercession. Now, I remember that intercession, we would have thought it was one of the gifts of the Spirit to hear some of the people in the Word of Faith movement. They're in the intercessors group. I tell you what, a nosier bunch of old biddies I have never met in my life. I knew a lady in the intercession group, and she was the nosiest piece of old. And she had something to say about this old brother, and so what he did was he took his truck, and everyone in the town knew his truck. It was this old beat-up red Ford 150, and he took it down to her place and parked it outside her place one night and then walked home and left it parked there all night. She never gave him a hard time again. So it's interesting. It's very interesting to see that prayer is equivalent to ask. Prayer is equivalent to a vow. Prayer is equivalent to a wish. In the New Testament, the words for pray are translated in various different styles.
All right. So as to your statements earlier, everything you just said connotes dualism by virtue of just the definition of all of these. It is dualism. Prayer is dualism.
Yes.
All right. So I'm hoping that people will understand why these became questions in my mind. Because those of you that have followed the progress of the Gospel Revolution, we know we dealt with dualism 3 years ago or so, and went into quite a bit of detail about dualism and laid all of that out. And I remember becoming almost obsessed with making sure that people knew there was no God out there. There is no God out there. There is no God out there. God is in here. God is in here. God is in here. There is no God out there. There is no between here and there. There is that none of that exists. And so in the process of doing all of that, that of course leads to progression of thought. If there is no dualism, then what is faith and what is prayer and what is hope based on the fact there is that dualism is no longer in existence in this thing called relationship between God and man. And even that connotes dualism. We're not in relationship. We are in. And
it's so hard to find the
it is so tricky because we are so addicted to dualism in our societies around the world. There's hardly language to express the lack of it.
And The only place we seem to find that is in the esoteric religions, in say, the Native American religions, in the that they were one with the earth, that they were one with the Great Spirit, that they were one with... Now, yeah. They didn't practice that much. They some of them ate each other, but that's another story. But we generally have to resort to the Eastern religions or the native religions, and even then we can't get an accurate picture. All we get is a little glimpse.
Yeah, because even the terms are not sufficient. The term oneness, remember when we went through that and we had to make sure that people understood that when we talked about being one, we're not talking about oneness, because oneness is a mental assent to.
That's why I invented the word unity. It was the only word I could come up with. Somebody out there, if you got a better word, help us here, because you would be amazed what our family members have helped us with. You want to know where redemptionism came from? That came from one of our wonderful family members who said, "Why don't you call it that?" But it's unit, oneness with God. We have dualism, and the only opposite that I can think of is unity, and
it's a biblical scriptural term. Is unity.
And it's not in union, it's not unified, it's not united, it's really unity.
And now we could even incorporate synagogued.
Synagogue, yes.
So,
See, you know, you're learning Greek at an amazingly fast pace.
I don't know what... being synagogued has to do with me understanding the Greek. It has to do with you understanding the Greek and me coming up with a comment about it. So here we are, folks. Now let me make a open statement about where I am. It is not where you need to be. It's not where we're trying to lead you to be. But over the last, and as most of you know, I will talk about some of these things for as much as a year to 10 years. We will, but until I'm ready to make a full declaration, I don't. Now, I have insinuated this and said it probably in many different forms, but I want people to know that for the last... between 2 to 3 years, I have not exercised prayer, faith, or hope, at least knowingly, I have not done it, for the purpose of seeing if these things, if doing them makes a difference, then surely not doing them would make a difference, right?
Have to.
Yes, exactly.
It's one of those ipso facto things.
Yes. Now, now I'm admitting to the world that for a consistent, persistent, and repetitive time of 3 years, I've not prayed for or about anything. I have not believed or tried to exercise faith to get something to change.
But that's worked out for you. That's really worked out for you. I mean, if you'd have been in Houston, you'd have been underwater.
Yes.
But now you're in Florida, so you wished to change, and it's as good as prayer to me. Man, if I had that kind of good luck outcome with with wishing, which is prayer, as we know.
And then with hope, that dropped off of my radar also about 3 years ago. Now, I've made the statement that I am a man of faith, not a man with faith.
But you've already told me that you hope you find someone better than me for the job.
Well, one can only hope.
What do you mean you're not a man of faith?
I am,
but you're a man of faith.
I am a man of faith. I'm not a man who uses faith.
You shouldn't say stuff like that, because a stupid person could get confused, you know.
Well, in that case, we're all stupid, because it can be very confusing. Because these are concepts that we have failed to address. Just like, you know, the issue of us finally looking at, it's like, well, what a novel idea. Let's look at this verse that says, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Let's look at it, see what the Greek says, and then lo and behold, wow, look what the context is. And the whole thing changes right in front of our eyes. So if your goal is not to grow in your understanding of the gospel, you're in the wrong place, because I am quite comfortable with changing my mind. And even with this, these are three such huge topics in the human condition that it not only has to be studied out in the original text, also in context, but you got to try it on for size. It's like going through the store and seeing 45 suits hanging on the wall. You've got to finally take one down and see, does it fit? Does it look good? Do I like the way it fits? You got to try one. If it doesn't, you know what? When it doesn't fit, what do you do with it? You put it back on the hanger and try another one. So what I'm doing is taking the suit of prayer, the suit of faith, and the suit of hope. Or let me refer to it as the way that I did before, because it certainly has felt that way. I've taken off the coat of mail, the metal chains of this jacket, and I have laid it aside. Now, I have not laid aside the gospel. I have not laid aside my absolute confidence in everything that I have been sharing about the gospel for all these years. The story of this incredible work of the cross, I've not laid any of that aside at all. Have no reason to. In fact, this causes me to lay hold of that and keep it closer than I ever did before. Because what's happening now is a centralization of my identity that I'm not allowing these three subjects to detract me from. I have the degree. Now, let me tell you the experience. Now, I've told you we do not determine truth based on experience. But things that you think to be true will come out in experience. So here is my experience. My experience has been an unbelievable, measurable increase in the degrees of peace, joy, mental and emotional stability, feelings of great security. Some might say false security. I'm not trying to debate what the security is. I can just tell you I feel incredibly secure. I feel prepared to face whatever life may bring my way. Now, I won't know until it comes my way. But I do know that I face things differently now, Don.
Yeah, but that's a pretty fair bet for you. I mean, you got a lot more years behind you than you got ahead of you. So you're not gambling with much, are you?
Not at all.
Do you think the average 25-year-old could get to this place easily?
I think the average 5-year-old could get there. And that's our hope, is that life will start out differently for the human race. Instead of being that 5-year-old who's been taught that there's a burning hell waiting on them if they don't believe and confess in Christ, that Jesus is now upset with them. You've made the Savior cry. You have disappointed God. And the list goes on and on and on. The world is coming to an end. You may never grow up because Jesus is coming back.
Oh boy. Talk about mental instability. Mate, it sounds like, when you're looking back over the last several years, it sounds like, and freedom is wide open spaces. It's just wide open spaces. But it sounds to me like you're traveling lighter, you know, wearing less mail armor, as you said. But you're traveling lighter in wide open spaces. And what else is the goal of it all anyway, if that's not it?
Well, this is the thing that I have – that's been my pursuit in life, has been this mental and emotional state of being. Everybody knows that I suffered severely from panic attacks, as much as 50 a day in my younger years. They waned, ebbed, and reemerged many different times in many different degrees and fashions, and they switched from the things that induced the panic or seemed to induce the panic. I couldn't walk through a grocery store and put my hand out for change. Odd, I know, but that was what it was. I couldn't sign my name in public. And I was teaching Word of Faith doctrine while this was all going on. And you just learn to hide. And I got very tired of hiding everything. It didn't make any difference what it was. I just got tired of hiding. I remember being in such mental and emotional anguish and torment that I laid in bed and I prayed to God to break both my legs. Now think of the mental view I must have had of God. To break both my legs, my arms, and my neck. Just please give me peace inside. Now, what a prayer.
I don't know what to say.
To what kind of a God did I have in mind that I would think that would maybe accept this deal from me? Okay, all right, I'll give you peace, but we're going to break both your legs, your arms, and your neck. Folks, I was firmly entrenched in pretty mainline Christianity at the time.
And the curious thing is that you saw God as President Trump, what is it? The art of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
You thought God could be do a deal with you. You know, he was someone that and not only would, but demanded it probably.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's make a deal. You know,
let's make a deal. There you go.
Let's make a deal, and it's as foolish as the TV program is. Not that it's not entertaining, and people don't walk away with wonderful prizes, but when your mentality of God is let's make a deal, oh my gosh, folks, there's something very wrong. I can tell you, which I just don't say these things to people, I cannot remember my last panic attack. I honestly cannot remember it. Anxiety, I just can't, and I've had some quote anxious moments that would have created that in me. It doesn't mean I have not experienced an anxious moment, but it is in direct correlation to an event. And once the event has occurred, the anxiety or the anxiousness about the situation goes away. If I see a car coming down the road in the wrong lane, headed straight for me, I'm going to be anxious. It's unavoidable. In fact, it's a part of our survival. But for anxiety to be there when nothing is happening, that's when something's wrong, Don.
Okay. Do you want to wind it up in a few words?
So I hope that you guys will hang on to your seats. If you want to hang on to your prayer, your faith, and your hope, please, please know that you are not being instructed to let these go, because we don't instruct people to do anything. Our goal is to share the truth, and we want to share it with you from a scriptural context. My persuasion is that prayer, just like scripture, has been fulfilled. My persuasion about faith, just like scripture and the law, has been fulfilled. My persuasion about hope is, why doth a man hope for that which he already sees? That is my persuasion.
The reason we feel entirely free to say what we think on this show, you have noticed it, haven't you? Is because we don't have to answer to advertisers, to a church board, to an eldership, to a pastor. We just use the value for value model. If you've received value from our ministry, then we ask you to consider donating towards our combined success. That is yours and ours. This ministry has been an uninterrupted success story for over a quarter of a century because of one and only one reason: you and your donations. You see, it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this earliest grace-based web presence for more than 25 years with equipment, website costs, a searchable public database complete with 3,000 hours of free material, 24/7 radio, podcasts, seminar recordings, videos, social media groups, forums, newsletters, and that's all just the beginning. We've got it all, and it's all just for you. www.gospelrevolution.com for more consistent, persistent, repetitive medicine of the gospel.
I like that.
Now, Michael, here's something else you like. It's Pledge Drive.
Oh, it is. And I'm not sure that me saying the things I just said is all that good for Pledge Drive. Maybe we should have waited till after Pledge Drive to do this. But as you know, Don, and all of our supporters, all of our detractors, lovers and haters, I've just never had the art of not saying what I truly am convinced that the truth is of a matter, or what it might possibly be, so we can look at it and examine it like we're doing this, with this concern about the impact financially. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just don't know what's wrong with me, but that just doesn't seem, and I know that that causes consternation for a lot of people. A lot of people who've been on staff over the years have been concerned about that. I don't seem to have that concern, and I don't know why. But we are in Pledge Drive, and so far it is successful. It would be fun to get a phone call from somebody I didn't call and them say, "Hey, Mike, I'm calling for the pledge drive."
And what number would they call you on?
They can call me on my personal cell phone, 832-318-9339. Once again, 832-318-9339. Now, we have an office phone here, but my cell phone is much more accessible to me. And I've got five or six messages on the office phone that I've got to go listen to. I'm not used to using that phone. So I decided on this pledge drive, I'm using my cell phone. I'm logging everybody's number into my cell phone so that next pledge drive, all I have to do is say call and their name, and that'll be it. Now, the other end of this is, all of you that I call, you've got my personal cell phone number. You say, "Mike, why in the world would a man do that?" I don't know why a man would do that either. But,
well, I do. Somebody might win the lottery between pledge drives. Call. Yeah.
And let me tell you something else that just happened in the Gospel Revolution. We got a phone call, and I think there's others who will be motivated to do the same thing. I just got a call from one of our Gospel Revolutionaries. And he said that he is in the process. He was in contact with his attorneys, and that he, upon his departure, from this planet. I don't know that he's departing this planet, though. That's the other thing. We say things that were cliche that meant something, I guess. But anyway, he told me that it was his desire to leave his home that is paid for to Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution. Now, I hope that this is a contribution that comes through long after I'm dead and gone. But folks, we are doing our best to prepare this gospel to continue, whether or not we are here or not. That's what we're trying to do, to whatever degree we can do that. And that's been to a lot of encouragement to me, I have to tell you, from Don Bartlett. He has really hammered me about this ever since the day I met him, I think. It's like, dude, give it a break.
Every Moses leaves a Joshua behind him.
Yes.
And and in that way, I can almost see, if you're going to manipulate Mike Williams, you need 7 or 8 years of good hard practice behind you.
And we've got other really good news that we're going to be announcing, and that is that we've got another addition to the effective
to the family. There's a pitter patter of little feet coming through the hallway.
There is. Compared to our age, it is the patter of little feet. We really need to get some younger people involved, and we have that. That is in the works. I have made the offer, and it has been accepted, but neither we nor they are ready to make any announcements just for reasons. But I can tell you it's exciting. I can tell you that it increases our capacity and our ability, our outreach in every form I can think of it, Don. This edition really does put the Gospel Revolution on a degree of steroids. So a lot going on. We need your support. I've set the goal for this pledge drive for 10,000. We've had new monthly come in. We really do need to increase the monthly by several thousand dollars. And we also need the one-time support. We're just right on the edge of taking all of our balances back to zero after a lot of expenses have gone out. But I've worked really hard at getting these things because we have to go ahead. Many things we have to go ahead and do and just put it on a credit card. And but we are reducing those now, and they've been greatly reduced back again. I think about 2 years ago, we may have been 3 years ago, we were at zero balance on everything. But we've had some time to accumulate some debt, but now we're in a time of getting rid of all of that debt. And you guys are helping us, and we've got a million and one things we need to do. So if you gave $100 last pledge drive, do 150, maybe 110. If you're at 25 right now, raise it to 26. Raise it to 30. If you're at 500, go 600 this time. But we really are asking you to really consider what you can afford to do. We don't want anyone doing something they can't afford to do. We love you so much. And we know that you love us. We hear it all the time. There's never a group of people on this staff who do not feel we've done anything worthy of being loved and appreciated the way we are. But we know that you do, and we thank you so much.
Let me remind you that every new donor will get a pharisectomy certificate stating that your inner Pharisee has been removed with surgical precision by the master and teacher himself, Michael Williams. Well, actually, it's Pastor Appreciation Month. We should be saying the right Reverend Michael Williams. Every monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be awarded with sponsor certificates. These are extraordinarily ordinary-looking certificates created in black Arial font on pre-used office stationery and presented in a cheap Chinese frame. Don't say we don't love you. Every monthly pledge of over $50 a month will be awarded with producer certificates. These are real producerships, and we will authenticate and endorse these producerships whenever we're asked. You can put your new title on your business card. Use it on LinkedIn. We hear that it pays off there. And use its authentic value wherever these endorsements are accepted. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month or $1,800 annually will be awarded with executive producer certificates. These carry the same weight as a producer certificate, but as an executive producer, you are being recognized for how you are helping the gospel to be spread. Use the title in your resume. Make sure, again, get it printed on your business cards and use it on LinkedIn. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, the concepts of heresy and blasphemy were invented by religion for the sole purpose of defending doctrines that could not defend themselves. Once I read a statement, that orthodoxy is put in place to stop unexpected things happening. Don't forget to visit Amazon and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Minniminicky. I promise that you will never forget it. It's by our special friend Pep Washburn. Just go straight to Amazon, and Touching Spirit is the name of it, The Letters of Minniminicky, because there is another book up there, Touching Spirit, and the author's name is Pep Washburn. If you would like to partner with us, and not just money, call our office on 561-557-1329 and speak to us about how you could possibly participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com, hit the connect link. It'll come straight to Mike and myself. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all of the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Palm Beach Garden. Thank you guys. Again, we love you so much. Enjoy the journey and enjoy what you heard. And again, please do not take this as an instruction for your life. None of this was an instruction, and you never will get an instruction from us. You will never get a correction from us. You will not get a letter. We won't get a letter, and it says, but I still pray. I still operate in faith, and I still use hope. But we will say, right on. Just keep it up. We do not instruct anybody about anything. We share the gospel.
Oh, yes. Well, yes, we do.
Yeah, open your pockets and give us your money.
Yeah. Praise the Lord and pass me the money. Yeah. Yeah, come on. Come on, mate. We're desperate. We both need new TV sets. All the better to see Benny Hinn on. We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better.
Always is.